Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
The Bean.
Here's John Williams.
The Bean. I'm with the mayor and the rest of you who, when you heard that news, went, oh, come on, you guys. What are you doing?
Lord have mercy.
This is John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio till 3. Our Mincing Rascals podcast drops on Thursdays. Judge best in the state. There's a guy named Kelly Leonard who does a really good podcast here at WGN Radio 2. Elif, what's the name of the Kelly Leonard podcast that he does as well? That thing is terrific.
Getting to Yes and.
If you know anything about comedy, I don't, but they tell me that's a point of drama. It's a point of theater. It's a point of comedy. You get to Yes and. It's a conversational tool as well, and the people at Second City know how to work that. They do workshops for businesses. So that's Kelly's line of work. And the interviews he does are so interesting, with such interesting thought leaders. Getting to Yes And is the Kelly Leonard podcast. You should search for that, and the Mincing Rascals if you like podcasts. It's 109 on WGN Radio. I don't know this. We're about to talk about soccer, but just give me like 13 seconds on the Bean. That's one of the great things about Chicago. It really is. The guy that made it doesn't want us to call it the Bean. It's Cloudgate. There it is in Millennium Park. And it's just beautiful and fun in so many ways. And it's been sitting there for a long time and nothing really bad has happened to it. So I guess we should, you know, sort of count our lucky stars that it took this long for some dum-dums to vandalize it. The vandalism marks aren't huge, and I guess they'll buff them out and it'll be fine. So, you know, worse things could happen to you or your city than having your Bean defaced. But really, it's just so pointless, isn't it?
Well, didn't they also deface the Cancer Survivor Wall?
Yes, they did.
Come on. Two things. It's like, why?
Why would you do it? Really, and of all of the things that just, you know, stick a stake in the heart of people that don't deserve it, the Cancer Survivor Wall, really? Like, if you're mad at the mayor of the city, and I know these knuckleheads didn't have any point, they were just picking some things, and the Bean is an obvious target, but if you had a molecule of intelligence, you wouldn't go off to the Cancer Survivor's Wall. They did that, too. So these are people that hate the city and don't care about what they do, and it's amazing how quickly they caught them. Or the suspects. I don't know how they were able to so quickly round them up, but it'd be very interesting to see how that case progresses. I'm thinking 30 years.
30 years.
It's 1:10 now. We'll keep you posted on that story. So the USA Women's National Team is in Lyon, France. They beat France in French territory. That was a big deal. That was the co-favorite, the other team that might be able to knock us out, France, and the other one might be England. And we're playing them in about 50 minutes. Let's talk to a couple of people who know a little bit more about this than I do. And we'll start with, let's see here, Brittany Arnold, who is the Chicago Fire sidelines reporter. Brittany, welcome to the show. You're on WGN Radio. How are you?
Hi, guys. I'm well. How are you? Thanks for having me.
So you're in Chicago right now, correct?
I am not in Chicago yet. I will be there in just a few hours.
Got it. Alicia Delgado will join us in about 60 seconds. She is in France, as I understand it, reporting for Pro Soccer USA. Expect the headlines out of this match for me, Brittany. What should we be looking forward to?
So this is going to be an incredible match. Obviously, if you've been watching the tournament thus far, the USA are looking to go all the way to the final, and they definitely are the favorites to do that. I think the biggest headline that is going to be surrounding this match is Megan Rapinoe. She is not in the starting lineup. That news just came out not too long ago. So that could be somewhat of a loss in the beginning of the match for the U.S. She's been remarkable the last two games for them. So that's something that we're going to keep an eye on.
Why are they not starting her?
That is, you're going to have to ask Jalel's that.
Jalel was the coach,
I was reading not too long ago that she's replaced by Kristen Press. So that's a coaching decision. But I know that England is going to be coming out swinging. They have never made it to the final in this tournament, and the U.S. are looking to grab another World Cup here. So they're definitely going to be looking to get those points here tonight, this afternoon.
Is there any insinuation that Rapinoe's strident personality might be a distraction? Better we bring her in and let the women just play? Is it something like that, maybe?
It could very well be. I think that coaches, you know, in there, they have that choice, right, to make the decision whether it's for an injury or to rest a player based on their performances in recent matches. I think that Jill Ellis is a brilliant coach. I was reading earlier, again, this is news that broke just about 20 minutes ago, so it's kind of new for all of us, but I am reading that she said she was going to speak about the decision after the match. I don't know if there's going to be more news coming out as we get closer to the game starting.
Yeah.
But Jill Ellis, you know, she's a smart coach, and I think that whatever decision she made was for a bigger purpose in today's match.
If you watch the Chicago Fire, you know Brittany Arnold as a sideline reporter and one of the commentators for Chicago Fire. But maybe you also read Pro Soccer USA. The editor and co-founder of that is in France right now. And maybe Alicia Delgado can give us a little more clue on what's going on over there. Alicia, can you hear us in France?
Yes, I can. Thanks for having me.
Jump into the conversation. What are you hearing about the Rapinoe decision?
Yeah, so a spokesman for U.S. Soccer, when I asked him whether it was an injury concern, because that's what we see mostly throughout this tournament when big players maybe aren't fully injured but are feeling a little tightness or having a little issue, we've seen Jill Ellis kind of bench them and opt to take them off the bench instead of risk it. So I asked the U.S. Soccer spokesman if she was injured. He said he couldn't say whether she was injured or not. We'd have to ask Jill Ellis after the match. But he did say it is not due to discipline. It's not a disciplinary thing. Also along those lines, you know, when Rapinoe was like peak in the headlines right after Donald Trump tweeted about her, that was before the last game and she started and scored 2 goals. So I don't think that's much of a concern for the team. But all we know right now is it's not a disciplinary issue. Also, though, on England's side, there's a major shift in the lineup. Their starting goalkeeper, Karen Bardsley, is out with a hamstring injury. So they have a different goalkeeper starting this match now.
Ladies, I don't know these players that well, but we all have heard the Megan Rapinoe stories, and we saw her score 2 goals against France. Is she the star of the team? Or, I mean, like, could you put it in terms of a, you know, LeBron James or Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo? I mean, could you just tell me where she is in the lineup in terms of talent and importance?
I mean, I don't really think it's fair to compare them to other male athletes in a completely different sport, but I will say that I would put Rapinoe, Alex Morgan, probably the top 2 most well-known athletes and successful, accomplished athletes on the roster. The other one would be Carly Lloyd. However, she's the oldest player on the roster now, and so while she was the star of the last World Cup, she's been coming off the bench this World Cup.
Yeah.
So they are definitely elite athletes, well-known globally, not just nationally. Bring in, you know, the fans, bring in the sponsorship. Those are the two on the team that do that the most.
And I'm just talking about importance to the team. I'm not asking about male, female, or other sports. Alicia, is she a pivotal player on the team?
Yes, 100%.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, well, I agree with that. She's very important to the
Well, then this is just kind of a mystery to me. I mean, if it's not disciplinary and we don't think it's an injury, then it'll be interesting to see what the strategy is. I presume you all expect Rapinoe to be in the match, correct?
I would hope so. And I think, going off of her point as well, yeah, she's as you were saying with the comparison with other players, she's absolutely important to this roster. And I'm actually, as we're talking and as I'm reading the latest stuff, I'm extremely interested in seeing why Jill Ellis made this decision, considering too that she's had 2 great matches.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that she's not starting her, and I think that this being one of the most important matches they're going to face, right, and especially against a very hungry England side. So I'm interested to see what news comes out as to why she made the switch.
Is it true? I've heard it said about this. Yeah, go ahead and finish that thought.
Oh, no. I was just going to say, I would definitely expect her to play unless it's an injury thing and they're concerned about it and want to rest her for the final. That would make sense. If not, if that's not the case, I'm racking my brain for a reason.
Yeah. Is it true, though, that, all right, so she might not get as many minutes in this match, but we not only have the best women's team in the world, but we also have the second best women's team in the world. That is, anybody coming off the bench for the U.S. is not a significant downgrade. Is that true, ladies?
Correct. 100%. The depth is incredible on the U.S. women's national team. And I think that more
especially
and more of the fan base, yeah, not only women fans, too. I think I see so many men soccer fans that are so engulfed in the World Cup because of the depth of the squad. And I think that it all stems back from 20 years ago. And every single generation of women soccer players has guided the next generation. And they have that same mentality every single World Cup that they've always had. And I think that's where it stems from.
Yeah, yeah. That's an interesting point. So much has been said. I mean, even amateurs like me, people that don't follow soccer, or certainly women's soccer, can see the athleticism and the skills, but so much has been made of the personality of this team, maybe too much. Would you ladies just talk a little bit about, and maybe Brittany, why don't you start, about the attitude of this team, and is it good or bad, and some of the controversy?
I think that not just with the U.S. team, but in general, there's been, you know, a movement, right, in the last couple of years, more aggressively than before with women and women in sports, and I think just women in general. I think that, you know, when you're in the public eye and you are an athlete, there are times where you have sort of that media criticism, right, of if you're being too strong and too opinionated, if you're handling things correctly. And I think that for me as a journalist and also as a mom, I have two girls, two little girls. I think it's important to, you have to have an opinion, you have to have a voice. And I think there's a way of projecting things, right? And there's a way of handling things. But I think that the U.S. Women's National Team is just showing that they're strong and they're doing that not only on the pitch, but they're doing it with their personalities and the way they express themselves. And just showing that, hey, we're women, but we can be just as strong as anybody else, just as tough as anybody else. You know, we can be individuals. And I think they're just trying to set that example to show younger generations that you can be anything you want to be and you can be tough. And it's okay that at the same time you're a female. And that's how I see they're portraying sort of their messages. I don't know if you may agree on that as well.
Being over here, it's actually interesting because it's a different perspective. I'm not seeing too much other than what I see on Twitter of how the United States and media over there is reacting to it. But here it's interesting because the British media leading up to this game has been very harsh on the U.S. women's national team. I think almost every reporter has asked whether they think that their comments are arrogant. And that's a huge storyline over here. So they've kind of been defending themselves. But what I noticed was the England coach said a lot of the same things that the U.S. coach and the U.S. players are saying, where, you know, anything less than a title is a failure and we're winners and, you know, we're going to celebrate like winners. And they're saying all the same things. And when I was on a British radio show on BBC earlier this morning and mentioned that the reporters on their side said, well, maybe it's the way that they're saying things and not what they're saying. So I think definitely it rubs some people the wrong way, but I tend to agree with everything that Brittany just said. I think there's nothing wrong with being confident and portraying that confidence and that strength, especially when you're reigning world champions and especially when you're this close to winning another title.
Yeah, I think you get to talk the talk if you can walk the walk, and they have done they have done that. You know, I don't know how the world views athletes, but I know in the United States we're having a conversation in Chicago about the cocky attitude of some of our baseball players after they hit a home run, they flip the bat, and maybe they give a little lip. And I'm one of those people, and it's an open conversation right now, but I happen to be one of those people that think a little of that is entertaining. These people are in an entertainment business. And also, it's insane to ask athletes performing at the height of their game to unplug their emotion and unplug their personality. I mean, that's just bizarre. And we don't ask the men to do it. We don't ask NFL players to do it. The National Football League is letting them dance, for crying out loud. So to me, this is just, it's not a reasonable request to ask,
right.
ask the women to dismiss the swagger that I think they deserve to demonstrate.
I totally agree. And that makes me think of the NBA Finals. I always felt that way about Kawhi Leonard. I'm like, when is this guy going to celebrate? When is he going to have an emotion? When is he going to feel anything for everything that he's accomplishing, right? And I feel like every athlete has their own personality and their way of showing it. But it's like you said, I mean, when you're at the highest level and you're the best of the best, there's nothing wrong with throwing your hands up in the air after you score a brace or a goal and just feeling that emotion. Because, again, we kind of tend to forget as fans that these are humans, right? And there's moments in the sport where they are humanized and they feel what we feel as fans. And, you know, there are levels that athletes have gone that are just, you know, I can see as disrespectful maybe to the sport or to their teammates. But I think when you celebrate and you've worked so hard to be as good as you are, no problem showing that emotion on the pitch or on the field or on the court.
Brittany Arnold, Chicago Fire sidelines reporter, and Alicia Delgado, who is in Lyon, ready for the match in about 40 minutes. She's the editor and co-founder at Pro Soccer USA. I presume ProSoccerUSA.com for that, Alicia?
Yes, correct.
Okay, check them out. Ladies, thanks for your thoughts on this. This has been very helpful and fun. Maybe you can join us again. If we win today, when's our next match, Brittany? Or Alicia, do either of you know?
Yeah, it's July 7th. July 7th.
Oh, I'm sorry, I lost you.
July 6th would be the third place game in Nice if they lose.
And if they win the championship, though, I mean, so would the championship game be July 7th then?
July 7th, yep, and the third place game is the day before.
I see. Okay, thanks for your help, both
of you. Which they will.
No, I'm so glad you guys could join us, and the Megan Rapinoe story is very interesting. She's not starting. We'll see how many minutes she gets today. That match starts in 35 minutes. It's 1:24. This is WGN.
People, can I have your attention, please, people?
Stay out of the public pools.
There it is.
Turns out crypto's not just a digital currency to lose your money on.
No big deal.
And Richard Roper tells us if Spider-Man Far From Home is close to perfect.
Broke On with Anna DeVlantis. Chicago's conversation is on 720 WGN.
You can travel the world, but you won't find many things more relaxing than a riverboat cruise down the Mississippi. Take in America's authentic Mississippi River experience on the Riverboat Twilight. Visit riverboattwilight.com and cruise the Mississippi for 90 minutes a day or two. You'll depart from the Quad Cities. The overnight trip includes delicious meals, a fun overnight in Dubuque, and short tours. This is great for families, reunions, and groups. You want to get far away? Travel the Mississippi. Visit Riverboat Twilight. Twilight.com.
Townsend Financial is synonymous with great rates, low closing costs, and phenomenal service to the thousands who have completed purchases and refinances with us since 2002. Hi, my name is Barry Sterner, owner of Townsend Financial. Let's hear from Jim, who just completed a no-cost refinance with Townsend Financial.
I would recommend Townsend to anybody, and I do. I always knew where we were. I knew the dates. I knew when I had to have information. There was no fire drills. The overall experience was, off the charts. I've not experienced, there's very few companies that I've encountered that really deliver that customer experience, and that's what sets you guys apart, hands down.
Remember, nobody values your business more than Townstone Financial, and I'm always available to answer your questions. Call me now at 312-896-2110. That's 312-896-2110, or go to townstone.com. That's TOWNSTONE.com.
Townstone Financial is licensed in Indiana, Michigan, Wisconsin, Florida. NMLS 136639. www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org. Equal housing lender.
DriveChicago.com, your only source for pre-owned vehicles in Chicagoland. Buy from a dealer you can trust. Thousands of high-quality late-model vehicles, many coming off lease right now. Log on. DriveChicago.com.
Says here, watch Navy Pier's Independence Day display. That's not PC, right? You can call it the 4th of July display, too, right?
Sure, you can call it whatever you'd like. Well, not whatever you'd like, but...
Right, Christmas display, that would be wrong.
And bringing back Merry Christmas, are you?
don't take me down that path. Watch Navy Pier's Independence Day display from home as fireworks light up Chicago's lakefront. It's Chicago's summer blast. It's a WGN-TV special. Wow, it's going to be on the 4th of July. What a coincidence. That'll be at 9:30.
Need to bring the independence back to the 4th of July.
I want to talk about the tanks someday, but not right now. American Sailor is known for having the best selection of pools, patio furniture, hot tubs, grills, everything for your outdoor summer fun. More importantly, it's the quality of the products they sell. And right now, during their Great American Sale, you can save up to 50% and pay no interest for 4 years. You get their lowest price guarantee, too. See the store for details. Come visit one of their 9 Chicagoland locations. American Sail, for 60 years, they've been helping you bring the fun home. What else is we going to do here? Ms. Garris, did I just whisper in yours something else I wanted to get done before we get to the news here in just a second? Oh, yeah, I know what it was. It was, how do you feel about the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team? That's our news click. Lafco, where are you on this one? A, U.S. Women's National Team, must-see TV, love their talent, attitude, and players. Or B, must-see TV, love their talent, attitude, not so much. Or C, wait, soccer? There's a World Cup? Which one are you?
I would say A, it's just a little difficult with, you know, a lot of the matches being during the day. And
haven't been able to watch it as much as you might.
But I mean, anytime our country has one of the best teams in the world at something, how can you not be excited about it?
Must-see TV, love the talent, love the attitude, love the players, 64%, meaning 16% of you are not even checked in, and 20% of you, 1 in 5, said the attitude, not so much. You're not loving the attitude. Except for that Thailand thing. When Rapinoe scored that second goal, and she just took that pose into the stands, that was great. That was a great moment. It was a memeable moment. And, you know, when it comes to soccer players, here's the behavior I don't like. When they get injured and they do those really bad acting jobs on the ground.
Oh, I don't think that's acting, John.
And the problem is that the clock never stops, or that they'll add time while that player is going through their sort of histrionics. But that's essentially a timeout for the player so they can all get a rest, right? That's the way I read that. But it's such bad acting.
Yeah, or they're trying to coax a foul call or a yellow card out of the official.
Well, then those officials must be blind, because some of that, it looks ridiculous. I don't like that. And then I don't like the super choreographed things after goals. I mean, you know, I'm all for celebrating and double clutch fist pumping and stuff like that. But
yeah, it's a different era, because one of your guests was saying, well, they're humans. They need to exclaim and celebrate. I'm like, well, not, you know, they don't all have to do that.
Well, I think they should be true to themselves. And if that's your personality, let's embrace a little attitude.
Well, I think it's just the way we've changed as a society, though. You know, we didn't, 20, 30 years ago, you just didn't do that. Walter Payton handed the ball to his offensive lineman.
This conversation without saying Walter Payton, please.
Well, he's just the best example of it. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong. All I'm saying is it's how we've changed.
I like Javi Baez's attitude at the plate. I like Wilson Contreras's attitude on the field. I'm completely with you on the Walter Payton thing, but Walter Payton isn't Wilson Contreras, and vice versa.
And there were a lot of other football players who were spiking the ball at the time, but they the celebrations weren't as outrageous. You didn't have a defensive lineman striking a pose every time he had a tackle.
People loved Jim McMahon. People loved Jim McMahon on that team, right?
Yeah, but
he was the punky QB, and we thought that was kind of fun.
That was mostly off the field, I think.
Okay.
I'm arguing against myself, but...
It's time for the news. Are you ready? It's
I thought of you, though, when Puig got thumped.
I know. And so there's... Puig is sort of the epitome of what I'm talking about, and I don't like Puig. Now, maybe I would if he were on my team. I found a place in my heart for Dennis Rodman when he came over from the Pistons, so we're funny that way. But I don't like Puig. And when he goes off or when he gets hit, I'm not on that guy's side at all, right? I don't even like his hair. So I have issues to deal with there. But when it's your guy, I think we tend to feel differently about it. I'm going to stop talking. Are you ready?
Yep.
To let go, use my time to be free. It's like it's always what you like. It's always what you like. Why it's always what you like.
I love this song.
It's always what you like.
It's 136 on WGN. She's in the back. What are you doing here, Elif Garris?
Well, I'm letting people listen to a song that they might not know yet by Lil Nas X, and then transitioning to the one that everybody knows.
That's the one we're listening to now.
Yes, this is called Old Town Road, and the reason why we're playing it is that Lil Nas X came out through the lyrics of the previous song on the last day of Pride Month, and it's not that clear.
That's the thing. If you're going to, like, embrace your homosexuality or whatever it is that you are announcing to the world, tell us what it is. But he's been kind of vague about that. And then he put another post out and said, in case you missed it, there's like a little rainbow in the post. But then he said, and I'm talking straight. So he's playing with words there. And it's, I don't care, but it's like, and both, I love the songs. I love the music.
Well, the way that he chose to convey that he's gay is by saying, ain't no more acting, man, that forecast say I should just let me grow. And then this is what I gotta do, can't be regretting when I'm old. So well, that makes sense when you know what it's about.
Yeah, and what fun songs, huh? It's 137. This is WGN.
That was really good.
Say it again?
That was a really good ending.
Yeah, that faded rather nicely there, didn't it?
And I didn't know my mic was still on, so there you go.
I am old school about old school. So the business that in Chicago, if you're running for office, one way to ensure that you'll get elected, if you have a formidable opponent, is to yourself get some other people to run against you so as to dilute the vote that your opponent would get. Particularly if, say, that opponent is Hispanic or has a Hispanic last name. And then a bunch of slubs like me come in and go, well, I don't want to vote for the normal guy. I'm going to vote for one of these minority candidates, Gonzalez, Barboza, Rodriguez.
Or you can look at it like, well, there's a set anti-Walsh vote in the district, right? 38% are going to vote against Walsh, the incumbent, no matter what. So if you can have more people in the race to split up the anti-Walsh vote, the chances that any other candidate will beat him is diminished.
Right. One-on-one, you might be able, you might lose. But if it's one-on-five, and right, five of them are splitting the anti-you vote, well, then you like your chances.
Throw in a couple Irish names in the right district or maybe Hispanic
right
name.
And so this is kind of what happened, at least goes the allegation. I'm reading from Ray Long's story in the Chicago Tribune. And this is a story that I've been talking a little bit about. But again, I don't know that everybody else is picking up on it because it's just, it's the way we do things here in Chicago. Political operative, this is Ray Long's reporting, political operative Kevin Quinn wanted a guy named Joseph Nasalla to help a no-name candidate get on the ballot in the 2016 Illinois Democratic House primary to run against Madigan. So here's Madigan's guy asking somebody else to run against Madigan. Why would Madigan's forces want to put up a candidate against their own powerful guy? Ray Long asks. When Nasalla asked, right, so they say, Nasalla, help us out on this. So he says, he asked Quinn, why are we getting somebody to run against us? And he said he gave him, quote, a poker face. You can just see him looking at him, kind of deadpan, like, what, do I got to explain this to you? This is how we do things. At the time, Quinn, this Kevin Quinn guy, was a key part of the Madigan political organization. He's not anymore. Nasella's account of what transpired in late 2015 emerged among new, never-before-seen depositions in a federal lawsuit. The lawsuit is alleging that Mike Madigan pulled off one of Chicago's oldest political tricks, putting sham candidates on the ballot to confuse voters and siphon support from a more formidable foe. In fact, that foe we're talking about, the guy that might have given Mike Madigan a little bit of a run, it was a little scary, was Jason Gonzalez, who was on our show afterwards and was angry and befuddled and just kind of throwing up his hands saying, yeah, that's what I was up against. But Tony Parayka, the former Cook County Board Commissioner, is handling the suit by Gonzalez, and he's contending that Madigan's team violated federal civil voting rights protections. They're seeking $2 million in damages. Tony Parayka is on the phone. Tony, it's John, and you're on WGN Radio. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Good afternoon to you and your listeners.
That's my assessment of it, Tony. Jump in there. Do we got it about right, at least what your side alleges?
Yes, I think you have the essence of our allegation exactly right. What we are attempting to prove here, and we believe we have the evidence to prove, is that Mike Madigan and his underlings have engaged in a pattern of fraud, election fraud, placing of two, one female, one male, sham Hispanic candidates on the ballot. People who have no fund to do anything. They didn't even have a working phone number for their campaign, let alone raise money. Then Mike Madigan's people circulated all of their petitions, printed them, circulated them, bound them, and drove them to Springfield, Illinois, to file them in Springfield at the State Board of Election.
Can you prove that, Tony? Can you
prove
that?
Yes. I have. We took almost 60 depositions in this case of all the people involved up and down the chain, including Mike Madigan's deposition, which I took personally for roughly 5.5 hours, and it's available online. Anyone can Google Mike Madigan deposition and find that.
Pardon me, Tony, and what does Madigan say? Does he admit that, yes, they did all of this?
He doesn't know a thing about a thing. How dare you? It's interesting. Here's a man who doesn't have a cell phone, never owned a computer, never owned a cell phone, never even had a fax machine, sends people to make phone calls for him. Just bizarre in 2019 that someone would behave in this such a squirrely way. Clearly he has a lot to hide. And initially, Mike Madigan and his 15 lawyers argued that, no, it's not true. We'd never done that. We would never do that. Now that we have witnesses to prove exactly that, the trial has been scheduled for October 7th in front of Judge Matthew Kennelly at the Dirksen Building. They have changed their tune, and now their argument or defense is that, oh, this is just the First Amendment right. Everyone has a right to get on the ballot, run as a candidate. They don't really have to put up a strong campaign or any campaign. Everyone has a right under the First Amendment. All of a sudden, they're defending the First Amendment. I mean, what I find really bizarre, John, is that here in 2019, after 2 years of chasing down Russians who are engaging in fraud, election fraud in our campaigns, we have the Speaker of the House, the chairman of the Democratic Party of the state of Illinois, who is engaging in a pattern of election fraud, not only in the case of Jason Gonzalez, but in another case that we're handling with David Krupa, who had the temerity to run against Mike Madigan's alderman, Marty Quinn, where they have engaged in a horrific pattern of fraud and going out there and getting 1,800 phony affidavits from people who allegedly withdrew their nominating signatures on the Krupa petition.
Okay, hold it right there, Tony. Parayka is on a phone line, and he is the attorney for Jason Gonzalez. Of course, you know Tony's name as well. Now he's representing Gonzalez. But just here's a sort of heads up to would-be criminals out there. If you minimize your digital footprint, if you don't have a fax machine, if you're not online, if you don't do Twitter, if you don't have cell phone records, boy, Ed Burke could have used this advice.
Yes.
Then you can't incriminate yourself. There's nothing on you. You've got other people doing your work for you, and that's kind of clever that way. But suppose they had been transparent about it. Suppose they said, yes, this is what we're doing. And this guy who has no political ambition, whose name we're putting on the ballot, there's nothing against the law. But what if he did want to participate in the process? And for some insane reason, we wanted to help him. I don't you know, see where they're breaking the law, helping somebody run against them. What's the violation there, Tony?
Well, the violation under the Civil Rights Act is that Jason Gonzalez, as a Hispanic male, is part of the protected class or classes under the Civil Rights Act. And what they have done to this Hispanic candidate who ran in the state representative district in the primary of 2016 is that they've diluted the vote with two more Hispanics, which has dried up his fundraising, which has siphoned off his volunteers, which have, you know, caused him to lose the election that he could have won.
Okay, but separate.
If this was a one-on-one case,
but,
one-on-one collection.
Okay, but suppose those other two Hispanic gentlemen or men, was it two?
It was one female and one male phony candidate.
Okay, suppose those people of their own volition wanted to run against Madigan and Gonzalez, and their names appeared because those people wanted it to be there. There's no violation of the law there, right?
Graciela Rodriguez, who was one of the candidates running against Madigan that they put up, had a Madigan sign in front of her house.
No, that's not the point. That's not the point. If she didn't.
Well,
she
who knows the candidate better than herself, though?
Well, exactly.
You guys, you're missing my point here, that you could have 1,000 Hispanic candidates on the ballot if 1,000 Hispanics wanted to run against Mike Madigan. There's nothing wrong about that, right?
It is wrong to put up people who have absolutely no desire or intent to run for office, and then have do nothing to obtain blank petition signatures to circulate those signatures.
Okay.
To sign them. You know, there's an affidavit that of a candidacy that one signs. That's fraudulent. These people never got out of their house. They never lifted they've never made one phone call. They never asked anyone for money. They never attended any of the candidate forums. They never had a website. They never did any of the things that every candidate, no matter how nominal,
does. But then they're bad candidates. So too bad for them.
If they lied on the nominee. Petitions. Okay, that's
it. Would not be against the law if these people did all of this themselves and then did nothing. But the fact is that Madigan and his underlings did everything for them. They were the ones who executed the whole fraudulent plan from step one to step 100.
Okay, hold
these
on.
People did not.
But even that's nasty politics. But if the signatures on the nominating petitions were legitimate, is what they did illegal?
Yes, because these people didn't know that the people that they were signing these nominating petitions for were phony, that they were just Madigan plants.
Oh, okay,
they were
wait
shills.
A minute. Wait, well, all right, but those people have to answer to that. That is, these sham candidates will have to say, yes, I'm a sham candidate. But but you're saying that the violation here is on behalf of the people who signed those petitions, they were, in fact, voting for or endorsing with their signature a candidate that was not a legitimate candidate. That's where
That's
the violation
right.
takes place.
That's right. What I'm saying is that the entire voting population of that representative district was defrauded by having these two people who had no intent or desire to run and were all both of them put on the ballot by Madigan and his precinct captains just for the purpose of and with the intent to bamboozle the voters and ensure Mike Madigan's reelection.
Is there a history of this, Tony Pareka? I mean,
it's been happening for the last 100 years, but doesn't make it right.
No. Is there a history of a case like this being judged in your favor? Is there a history of they say, when this happens, we're going to award the plaintiff millions of dollars? You're seeking $2 million on behalf of your client.
Right, because that's what Jason Gonzalez and his donors spent on this election.
Has this happened before? Have
no, there is no precedent across the United States. We have searched across all 50 states. There's no precedent where any case like this or similar to these facts has been litigated to trial.
Yeah.
What happens is that most candidates, once they lose, they don't want to litigate anymore. They walk away, the case is dismissed, and that's it. Jason Gonzalez is the first a candidate who is now seeing this case through with our help and will have the case go to trial. We're currently briefing the motion for summary judgment that the Madigan, dozen lawyers have filed. But
Tony,
confident that they're going to lose and the judge will deny that motion because we have sufficient facts to buttress our claim and allegations.
Your client is Jason Gonzalez, who in 2016 ran against Mike Madigan. Do you remember what the vote total was? How close did Jason come?
Jason had, I believe, like 38% of the vote. Madigan, I think, had 62, 63%, something like that. But the fact of the matter is that we will never know what the ultimate outcome of that race would have been had it been a one-on-one Madigan versus Gonzalez race. And that's exactly the reason Mike Madigan and his minions did what they did.
Still,
they
think
didn't
about
want to win fair and square.
Well,
they wanted
it.
To rig the race in their favor, and that's what they did.
Think about it, though. So with those shenanigans in play, they win by almost 2-1. A little less than that, but I mean, that's a trouncing. And you're Mike Madigan. My God, if you are the epitome of reelectability in Illinois. And yet even that guy resorts to these sorts of creepy, unethical tactics. Well, there's no criminal offense here, right? I mean, this is a civil case.
There's plenty of criminal. Let me put it.
You don't get to answer that, Tony, but go ahead.
There's plenty of criminal activity here. If a Cook County state's attorney or the state's attorney general, neither one of them are going to move against Madigan because they need him, want him exactly where he's at, or the U.S. attorney, who is the only independent arbiter here, who does have the authority and discretion to indict Mike Madigan for this kind of activity and other activity. And I believe if you look at the lay of the land and the things that have happened here over the last certainly 6 months to a year, that Mike Madigan is definitely under the microscope by the U.S. Attorney's Office.
I haven't
heard
them prosecuting this case yet. But
you haven't heard it. That doesn't mean it won't happen.
Do I understand correctly that an activity could be bad, but an activity is even worse? I'm just pulling your leg there. Okay, so what's the next step then, Tony? What happens next in this case?
The next step is that we intend to defeat the summary judgment motion that Madigan's lawyers have filed, and then we intend to proceed to trial, whether it's in October or whenever Judge Cannelli decides to set or reset this case.
Well, we've reached out to the other side, and I hope they join us. Having heard your side and having had my own feelings even before you came on with us, when Jason was on with us last year, I hope you guys win. I hate this kind of crap. Like, just, you know, win, play fair, and, you know, let the people have as much information as possible. Maybe that's incumbent upon the voters to know what a sham candidate is and isn't. But I don't like this kind of politics. So I standing here right now, I hope you're successful.
John, what we intend to establish here by seeing this case through is to set a precedent that one cannot engage in this kind of fraud upon the electorate again and again and again, as Mike Madigan has done for decades. This has to stop, and I commend Jason Gonzalez for having the fortitude to see this case through.
I don't know if Madigan has radio. He's not real consumer electronics friendly, but if you do, Mike, we'd be happy to entertain you or your team. Tony Parayko represents the other side, Jason Gonzalez, on this sham candidate case. What a pleasure. Tony, join us again. Thanks for your time today.
The pleasure is mine. Thank you.
There he goes. 153 WGN.
Thinking big thoughts. So you don't have to.
So
here's John Williams.
It's raining. It's 209. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio. I'm John Williams. Thanks for tuning in. I really mean that. What a lousy summer we've been having. If you are a roofer, if you stain decks, if you're a kid's baseball team, you've just been having a time. Hard to plan and count on anything. And for those of you that thought, oh, we'll get married in June, it'll be lovely. Not so much. And maybe the pictures went well, but maybe you were standing there and then something just blew up, kind of like happened at Pride on Sunday. It was fine, and then it wasn't. And I just think of all of the contractors out there who have to. Our Mr. Fix-It, Lou Manfredini, had somebody on, and they were talking about how they needed five dry days before they could treat the deck or paint the house or whatever it was. I don't remember ever having five dry days, ever. So maybe we'll get a break here, but none seems to be in sight. You know, you'll have a nice day, and then boom, it's that. Still, they've been able to, hey, coach, sit down. They've been able to play softball. I want to give you a quick update because a lot of people have been calling. Actually, no one's called.
The U.S. just scored.
Did we?
Mm-hmm.
The USA is now with 9:20 on the clock. I'll tell you what, this USA women's UK game and World Cup in Lyon, France right now is insane. The ladies are going at it. Kicks on goal, or however they describe it, on both sides. You know, great goaltending, great scoring.
Frenetic.
I mean, really, they're both playing like, boy, we've got to come out firing because this is our chance. And the USA just scored on a header. Remember, Megan Rapinoe not in the game, and they have not said why.
Well, she had her leg taped up during her morning or the warm-ups when they came out, so that indicates probably an injury.
An injury. They said it was not for disciplinary reasons.
Maybe it's a super secret deke.
That could happen. Or maybe they just picked up some information in the hotel lobby on the UK, and this is how that plays out.
That hotel?
It was in France, wasn't it?
What city?
Lyon.
I just like hearing you say it.
So a lot of people have been calling asking, how did the WGN Radio softball team do? Let's spend 60 seconds or less.
Less?
With Ernie Scanton, the coach of the WGN Radio team. Ernie.
I'm the assistant coach. Justin is the coach.
Justin Kaufman, who you hear in the evenings on Extension 720. How did we do in our last match?
We played well. This guy over here hit some bombs. He wants me to.
Sam Panionovich is also in the studio.
Let everyone. No, I'm not. I'm just playing. Sam is our power hitter.
The Reader.
We beat the Reader bad.
What was the score?
16-3.
Wow. Does it come a point where it starts to get ugly? Where maybe you guys ought to stop running up the score on these little.
That actually last night that was suggested to us by the Reader that we were running people a little too much. I don't know. That you're not supposed to advance to the next base once the ball leaves the infield?
If you're up by 10 runs against a team you could beat by 20 and you've got a runner on first and somebody hits a single, what do?
Tell them to stop at second. Station to station.
There you go.
Once you go up and it's out of reach, I fully agree.
Or were you doing that? Were you running up the score?
No.
No, we were not overtly running up a score.
The problem was they scored the first two runs of the game, top of the first inning, and started jawing.
Yeah.
We came back with four in the bottom of the first and just killed them.
And they never scored. They didn't score again until the sixth.
Well, I guess they've learned a lesson, haven't they? So we're now 3-1.
3-1 in
first place.
We've scored the most points. We've scored the most runs. Point differential.
Talk about our pitching.
Our pitching is incredible. Kevin McDonough may be the best pitcher in the league.
I just said that.
He is truly. He got an actual swinging strikeout yesterday, which does not happen often.
In slow pitch clincher.
In slow pitch 16-inch softball. By a guy who can actually hit, like I've seen a guy hit.
That is so embarrassing.
It is a huge. I wanted to throw it around the diamond, but I thought that may be a little.
King always asked me, though, how did the team do? I said, your show's off at 3?
Yes, sir.
Games are at 7?
I will say this.
I will neither come nor watch, nor play, nor anything. I have nothing to do with this.
Brad Ferre had a great game, too. Brad Ferre had a really
good
game.
He's our shortstop
yesterday.
From Sales.
He is the shortstop. And
he's covered in dirt.
He was chest covered in he got down and dirty last night. He was diving for ball stop and stuff. He had a really,
all right,
really good
time's
game.
Up. So once again, WGN Radio softball team beat the Reader softball team 16-2.
Crushed.
We're now 3-1. By the way, we're not undefeated. So for all of that smack you're talking, we did lose our first game.
We did, sadly. I wasn't coaching that one.
Goodbye, Ernie. Ernie Scanton does production for us here and is the coach of our team. Speaking of sports, again, the women are up 1-0 against England, 13:02, 13:03, clicking forward on the clock in in World Cup soccer. Sam Panionovich is here. Sam, you follow numbers on games, and at the beginning of the season, we asked you to tell us, what are the Cubs' chances? What was the number you picked for Cub wins?
I made the number lower than Vegas did. The Vegas number, and remember, they set these before the season begins. These fluctuate until opening day. And then once the season starts, they're locked in. The first number that opened up in Vegas for win totals was 90.5. And all these numbers are different depending on all the different casino joints in Las Vegas. So 90.5 was the first number. Right away, I was talking to bookmakers that said the biggest bets against, the biggest shorts, if you will, in the market were on the Cubs.
So people that number, betting that they would not win 90.
People betting under 90.5.
Wow.
And it not only did it go to 89.5, 88.5, it got all the way down to 87.5.
I saw that.
Then it was eventually built back up because the Cubs are a popular team. People love to bet the Cubs. But you and I were talking about that baseball prospectus number. Their projection was 80. So the computers had been against this team all season long.
Okay. And what are they on a pace to win now?
Well, right now they're 45-40, so right around where we thought they'd be in the mid-80s.
If you'd said 85, I would have taken the over on that.
I know you would have.
86, I would have taken the over.
I know.
90's tough, but when that number came in at 80 and 80 and numbers between 80 and 87, I thought, oh, hell yeah, I'm going to take the Cubs.
Free money!
That's the way I was thinking about it. Then June happened, and I thought, maybe these people know stuff that we don't. I mean, were they did the computer model or the smart guys know that we wouldn't have pitching in June? I mean, how do they know?
That was the big metric, the pitching. Vegas didn't believe in the pitching, and I think a lot of people, because you can only do so many things on a calculator or a computer, right? You don't play these games on calculators or computers. I think a lot of the wise bookmakers looked at a team that has a manager that's pretty much a walking duck right now. He's not under contract.
Walking duck, what does that mean?
They might not bring him back next year.
I was thinking that for the first time today. If he doesn't get this team at least into and deep into the playoffs, maybe people are going to look at Joe Maddon's style. Although Brendan and I were talking about this morning. I said, what is Joe Maddon supposed to do? Is there somebody on the bench that people are going, oh boy, I wish he'd play that guy? Do they wish that somebody would hit in a different position in the order? I mean, what is Maddon doing wrong?
Some would say that his style is wearing thin, that all the foofy stuff with the animals and the road trips where you dress up like
I know that.
Whatever, that's wearing thin. But I liken the situation to a very similar situation that just happened a couple miles west of here, where it's Stan Bowman and it's Joel Quenneville. Is Stan Bowman going to fire Stan Bowman? No, he's not. Even though the players that are on the ice, that are being put on the ice by Joel Quenneville, yeah, he has say in the rotations and the lines and who's in goal, but the team is constructed by people above the head coach. But the head coach is always usually the fall person.
But I felt that at times, this was the criticism even in 2016, especially in 2016, maybe Maddon overmanages the team. I'm not getting that feeling this year. I'm not seeing him putting pitchers in left and getting cute about it. I just see guys not hitting in clutch situations and the pitching isn't there. I'm not mad at Maddon this year. Like, weirdly, we kind of were mad at him at times. What are you doing in 2016? Am I right about that?
You're right about that. In years past, he was a little too cute, but this year it's been underperforming. I mean, Kyle Schwarber, yeah, he's got 18 home runs, but you look at the average, 235. Hayward's having a better year, yeah. But Almora's struggling. David Bode is struggling. Addison Russell can't get out of his own way at the plate. Baez is playing well. Rizzo is always your rock over at first, but it's been the core guys that played really well from 14, 15, 16, 17. The last couple of years, they just haven't been those guys.
So when the Blackhawks got a new coach, do we think that worked out well for them this year? Was that a good move for the team?
Not initially it wasn't, but I think over time, you can't just come in mid-season and change everything.
My attitude, the feeling I had at the end of this season was, doggone it, we got to right this ship. But maybe that wasn't such a bad move to change the culture a little bit.
I think Theo Epstein, if we're trying to get to the issue here, he needs to do something with this roster.
Okay, you sent me a thing. Okay, fair enough.
But he needs to make a move. He needs to make a trade.
And in Schwarber, years past, are you going to get rid of somebody?
I don't know what you get for Schwarber. You trade him to the AL. He's a DH in the AL. What do you get back? The question is, who can you move that will bring in a quality player in return? In years past, remember, they had the number one farm system in baseball. That's gone. Those guys are either on other teams or they're with the big club.
But are you making deals for pitching or are you going to trade somebody out in the field?
I'd probably try and get a pitcher and I'd try and shore up that bullpen. I know Kimbrel will be okay, but you probably need another guy in the seventh or eighth inning.
So I asked you, what are the odds in Vegas, Sam Panionovich? This is your specialty.
Sure.
And you sent me a graphic and I had no idea what it means.
You were befuddled.
Dodgers plus 125, Cubs plus 500, Braves plus 500. Brewers plus 700, Cardinals plus 1,200, Nationals plus 1,200. I'll give you one more. Phillies plus 1,200.
Those are odds for the National League pennant. And what that means is that's based on a $100 bet. So Vegas is giving you the probability to bet on who will win the National League pennant. So the Dodgers at plus 150, your $100.
$125.
Oh, so it's moved. All right, so it was 150, now it's 125. So that means your $100, if you walked up to a counter at that sports book with $100, if the Dodgers win the pennant, you get bet. You win $125.
Right, well, I don't like that. I mean, that's a lot of risk for me for a $25 game.
But that's telling you just how good that team is and how respected they are by the markets. So and the Cubs then, so if you took a $100 bill right now, you pulled a Benjamin Franklin out of your wallet and you walked up to a counter and bet right now on the Cubs to win the pennant, $100 would make you $500.
Okay, but I don't like the Cubs enough right now to put $100 on them, even if I could make $500. Now, the Brewers are plus $700. To me, that's a more attractive bet, just because what happened last year.
And careful,
I'm not feeling it for the Cubs. Would you put $100 down to win $700 for the Brewers?
I don't think I'd bet any of those teams at those prices.
Oh, okay, so you don't like anybody in the National League based on the odds?
No,
based on
I don't.
The
well,
lines.
Because those are fluctuating over the course of a season. Well, those change.
Who in the National League do you like right now?
The Dodgers. If there's not a year that the Dodgers, I mean, this is their year. If they don't get it this year, they're cooked.
Now, on the American League side, the numbers are Astros plus 450, Red Sox plus 2,500. That means they don't like the Red Sox. The Red Sox probably aren't going to win the World Series. Is this to win the World Series or to get into the World Series?
Red Sox are 25-1 to win the World Series.
25-1. Dodgers, 300.
3-1, right? That just tells you that's how good they are, and that's how much Vegas respects them. So if you put $100 on the Dodgers to win the World Series right now, you get 300. That's it.
And the Yankees are next at 350. Mm-hmm. So does that mean that Vegas thinks it's the Dodgers and the Yankees in the World Series?
That's a pretty good bet. Or maybe the Dodgers and the Astros. Astros are right behind. But Vegas is telling you the best teams in baseball right now. This is essentially what this is. The teams with lower numbers are better perceived. So the Vegas bookmakers are telling you the Dodgers are the best team, then the Yankees, then the Astros, and I guess then the Cubs?
Sam Panionovich, you know him from WGN Radio Sports not that long ago. He didn't work for us in that capacity now. You hear his voice on a podcast now and again. He's got other ventures up his sleeve down the road, and it involves sports gambling in Illinois and across the country. So then give me this number, because you follow it, Sam, and that's why I like talking to you, and I don't understand this stuff. You personally, tell me who you would put money on to get into and win the World Series in a minute. By the way, World Cup soccer, England won, USA won, 22 minutes almost into the game. The World Cup match in Lyon, France between England and the United States, it's 1-1. The United States is drilling the ball at this British goalkeeper, and she, by the way, is a last-minute replacement. Their normal goalkeeper is out with a hamstring injury, and the woman that's in the net for England has been turning back some amazing shots by the U.S. The game is very fast-paced. We're talking about a slower-paced game, baseball. Sam Panionovich is in the studio, and after Bleacher Report put up a story today saying how lackluster the Cubs played in June, it's a good team, not playing well. What's going on? I started to look or wonder about the odds. I called Sam Panionovich, formerly of WGN Radio Sports, who follows these things, and said, what's the number? He sent me a graphic that said plus 500. And then I said,
that's to win the pennant. World Series, 12-1.
12-1.
Which implies an 8% chance that they'll win the World Series.
I asked you before the break, so if you were betting, who would you bet on to win the pennants? Who would you bet on to win? We've determined that Vegas right now says it's Dodgers and Yankees. And if it's just betting, then it's the Dodgers to win it. That's what Vegas is saying.
Let me just give you one. The Atlanta Braves to win the World Series right now are about 14-1. Some have them at 12, some have them at 14. They just came into Wrigley, won a couple games, look really good. It's a deep lineup. They hit the snot out of the ball. They've got a pretty good rotation, and I like their bullpen at the number. That's what it is. Dodgers 3-1, you're not intrigued, right? And 3-1, 1-3, 1-12 now. Interesting. I think the Atlanta Braves are a really good team. They're in first place right now, but nobody's talking about them because they talk about the Dodgers and the Yankees and the Astros.
Okay, so if I said, without any money changing hands, who do you like? You would say the Dodgers. If I said, what's a smart bet to make money, which is a different conversation, you'd say, take Atlanta. You can make a lot of money and you only lose 100.
It's two different questions. And one of your texters asked about the White Sox odds. What would the White Sox be right now? If you put $100 right now, the White Sox are 200-1 to win the World Series.
200-1. Wow. Well,
so that's 100 down, to win $20,000. Yes.
And as insane as that sounds, remember, all the White Sox have to do is get a wild card berth and then get hot. that's probably not going to happen, right? But, I mean, it's not like they have to be the best team in baseball. They just have to get into the playoffs, and that's not an insane proposition.
Have to get hot at the right time. I would like their pitching staff a lot better if they had Rodon and Kopech, though. So I'd maybe hold off on that until next year, until they get a little healthier.
Okay, so National League, you say Dodgers to win, but an interesting bet, if you can afford $100, is Atlanta. Do the American League.
Boston Red Sox.
To win it all. Or, no, that's an intelligent bet, because the odds for Boston...
I think it'll be Yankees-Dodgers. That's boring, but those teams are just so far and above the competition.
So if you wanted to make an interesting bet, and you could make money with the Red Sox... The Red Sox number is, I'm looking for it again.
25-1.
25-1.
They just won the title last year. And there are a lot of games left in the season. We got to get through July, August, and September.
By the way, Joe wanted to say, Kathy wanted to say something about Joe Madden. Kathy, you're on WGN.
Hey, thank you. Hi. I just feel like Joe needs to go now. I know David Haw had an article recently in the paper. Sam, I don't know how you feel about this, but, you know, maybe that would be the shakeup that's needed. Last Monday, he was doing a talk show at his bar. He wants to be a Charlie Rose talk show host now. So he just has a time for him to go instead of studying for the game the following day.
By the way, before Sam answers that question, you answer that question. Kathy, are you ready to cut ties with Joe Madden?
Yeah.
Okay. What do you say?
If they don't make the playoffs, unfortunately, he has to go.
You'd let him finish the season.
I'd let him finish the season. He's been to the playoffs every single year. By the way, I know you got to go. I have one more number for you. You have time?
Yep.
The over-under for total hot dogs eaten by Joey Chestnut.
I wasn't going to ask, but go ahead.
What do you think it is? He's got 10 minutes.
I hate this event. You don't know how much I hate this event. That ESPN covers it will ruin my 4th of July. How much time does he have?
10 minutes.
He gets 10 minutes to eat.
And they put a price on this.
How many hot dogs? Wagering on this?
Oh, yeah. You can bet the over-under he will eat this amount of hot dogs.
I resent me for even answering this. 82 hot dogs.
73 and a half.
73 and
good
a half.
Good guess. Yeah. That's a lot of hot dogs. In 10 minutes?
He just got an email from his arteries saying, please don't do it. Okay, Sam, it's nice to visit with you.
Always.
He plays left field for the WGN Radio softball team. He's Sam Panionovic. USA Women up 2-1.
Hey, I'll do the reporting here. I already said that.
In the pitch.
On the pitch.
On the pitch.
Right.
In the pitch.
The best thing about being a sport-watching dad was when the boys started playing soccer, because there's a clock that doesn't stop.
Yeah. So you mean the thing's not going to go on endlessly, right?
And you know it's going to end in 34 minutes, give or take a few.
My son played soccer. He was on a team one year when he was in grade school, and we were experimenting with sports. So Grant played one year of football and one year of, gosh, it's hard to believe. Was he actually on a soccer team? But I remember then all the parents had to be involved. So I was an official. I did not know any of the rules. I had no interest in learning the rules. I mean, I was busy. I didn't want to do it. I had these ridiculous socks that went up real high. And
oh, yeah, I love those socks.
Pads. And I never had to do it. I was never called upon to officiate.
Did you have a little yellow shirt, little yellow jersey, black pants?
I got some of that stuff. Yeah. And I enjoyed wearing them. But I was not qualified to be, if they said, hey, was it on the inside or the outside of the white line? I could have told them that, but that was the only thing I was competent to do.
Did you also have to wear the shin guards? Because that was the worst part of playing. The shin guards mixed with the socks and how hot it would be. It was the most uncomfortable feeling.
Now, was that you as a player or as an official?
As a player. And that's why I was curious if you had to as well.
Yeah, I did get those, but I just wore them to bed at night. 2-1, USA. Yeah, it's the current score. How was your game, Lauren Lapka?
I wasn't the best, but I played 1 year as a forward and then 2 years as a goalie, so clearly they were just trying to put me in places.
That's the thing. If you're one of my best friends, his daughter is a goalie on a college team, and she goes to goalie camps, and it's a big deal. I can't imagine how...
Yeah, especially if you're a young kid, that's pressure on a kid.
Yeah, I was never a big fan of playing. But yeah, you're right. So many people get so into it. I was more of a gymnast, I tumbled around. I didn't run after a soccer ball.
My son tumbled around too, but he played soccer.
But if you but if you're a kid who wants to run around, like if you like soccer, it's because you like running and kicking a ball. So if you become a goalie, you how many actual minutes of activity do you get? You're critical, but that just looks like so not fun, right? You're not doing anything.
You have quick response, good eye-hand coordination.
Right? All of that. Huh? I guess those are the special skills. But even then, if you have all of that, how many times do you call upon those skills? Like sometimes the goal is made because you had no chance at getting to it. And sometimes they don't even get a good shot on goal. So props to the parents and the kids who decide that's going to be their calling, because that looks like not a lot of fun to me. I'm watching the game. I got to stop doing that. By the way, the texts include these. Hey, John, how nice to hear Sam Panionovich on the radio. An 847 texted in and said, while we were talking about the rain pouring in Chicago, it's nice and sunny and Skokie. I got to keep reminding myself of that. I get so mad at my weather apps and weather forecasters and the forecast that we do here, but it's just been that kind of summer. You know that. You can drive in and out of this rain, or the rain that's coming upon you will come and go. It'll be sunny, and then it'll be rainy, and then it'll be sunny again. The way it goes. John, can we please address the issue of the people who vandalize Millennium Park? It's getting out of control. I don't know what's getting out of control. Isn't this the first time that the Bean has been vandalized?
I think so, yes.
And when you think about it, how long has the Bean been there? 15 years?
It's pretty amazing.
So I, you know, let's not keep score. Somebody else is going to say, oh, well, I'll fix that. But it's amazing how revered that is, what an easy target it is, and how, in fact, it has avoided this kind of stupidity. I'm still not certain on how it is that they were able to round up a half a dozen people on this. You'd think if you were going to do it, you'd make sure you didn't get caught.
Are there cameras around there at all?
They've got to be.
I'm going to say, yeah. Oh,
okay, but that they have them on camera doesn't mean those kids running away, you know who they are or where they are.
Well, if they're still around,
if they're monitoring it in real time,
factors, yeah.
I guess, yeah, right. And so now, I mean, you know, I don't know who this kid's attorney is going to be, but he's going to have his work cut out for him, because this will not be treated like somebody spray painted the side of a building or an L car, right?
Well, you know, Mayor Lightfoot's come out pretty strongly, surprisingly, really, saying she's going to follow this to make sure the message is sent and all of that, you know, and to have an elected official talk like that before there's even someone charged.
She's going to go after this like Trump's going after homelessness and public urination. This is like a new, this is a
Did
cause.
Did that just start 2 years ago? Or
I don't understand how Donald Trump, he had this rambling, was he talking to Tucker Carlson or Sean
yes,
Hannity?
Tucker Carlson.
And, you know, they just know to just be quiet and not try and figure it out. And here's what I took away from Trump's commentary to Tucker Carlson, that he had seen something. He'd seen some homeless people, and it was unfortunate, and it was ugly, and he didn't like it. And those are always awkward situations. What do we do about that scene?
Well, because Carlson said, look, it's so clean here in Japan.
Is that what started it?
In the streets of Japan, you don't see that, and you see it in the U.S., you see the homeless and things like that.
Yeah. Oh.
And I think the president is so used to saying that everything was bad until he got here a couple years ago, that he slipped and he reversed them. He said, well, it really didn't exist until a couple of years ago.
Yeah, and I don't know what that reference point was. Even if that was a mistake, fine. He meant to say that we had a homeless problem when Obama was here, but now that I'm here, it's gone.
Right.
That's how you play that card.
Right.
And he reversed it. Because I can't think of anything else that's happened in the last couple of years, right? Homeless or otherwise.
I just think
he botched his own line.
Speaking upside down.
Yeah. Line one has a comment. Rick has a story he wants to tell us about playing soccer. Hey, Rick, you're on WGN Radio. What's up? Hi, Rick, you're on
the air.
How
are you, John?
Hey, I'm good. What's on your mind?
How are you?
Good.
As I was telling your producer that I was a goaltender. I played on the professional level in Toronto.
Oh, wow.
And it's actually a really fun position, but we do have an expression that what do goaltenders and fighter pilots have in common, or not fighter pilots, sorry, anesthesiologists.
Okay.
And that is hours of boredom and seconds of terror.
Yeah, right.
Because you stand a lot, but when it comes at you, it really comes at you.
And I guess like a surgeon or a fighter pilot or a goalie, you really want that person to be good at what they do, right?
Right. And the one thing that people don't understand, I have a lot of sympathy for goaltenders. A lot of people blame the game on the goaltender. Well, the ball's got to get through 10 people before it gets through the goaltender. So we need all the help we can get.
Are you watching the matches or the tournament? Are you all wrapped up in the World Cup?
I am. I don't watch as much as I used to because I played, and actually watch soccer can be really boring.
Maybe
but
for you,
the
yeah.
The highlights are tremendous.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, the match so far has been good. USA up 2-1, halfway through almost. Now it's 43 on the clock. Hey, listen, thanks for calling. Thanks for the heads up.
All right. Take care. Bye.
John, I love you, but no public space should ever be vandalized. I'm sorry, Lauren, was I advocating for the vandalization of public spaces?
I would think that you were doing the opposite there, John.
Thank you. I said, I think I hate to be this kid's attorney because they're going to have the work cut out for him. They're going to throw these kids in jail or whatever it is that they can do for this act of public vandalization. If it was something else, but it's our beloved bean, you can't do that. I just want to go back to Steve Cochran's show for a minute because he was playing some of that audio where the president was talking to Tucker Carlson. Steve isn't 100% today. He did a show and he went home not feeling that well. Otherwise, I was going to have him on. But he and I have traded messages. And I want to play part of what Cochran did today on the radio. And then I have something to say about it. This soundbite's going to go about 3 minutes long. It's a little long, but it's very interesting what Steve was saying on the radio this morning with our Senator Dick Durbin. And they were talking about the Democratic debate the other night and how Joe Biden has been falling in the polls as a result. And I think some of the points that Steve Cochran made to the senator were very good. And then the senator has his own thoughts about who Joe Biden is. And then they go on to make another point about Kim Jong-un. And I think the juxtaposition of those two was a bit of a head-scratcher. This is from Cochran's show this morning on WGN.
There was an abject panic that gripped the Democratic nation last week because Joe Biden had an off night. And Kamala Harris, frankly, in my opinion, look, people are going to disagree, but I thought she cheap shotted him. She knows full well that he's not a racist. She stipulated that he's not a racist and then proceeded to point out that he was acting like a racist. And CNN and MSNBC have been running with it now for days. You know Joe Biden.
I do.
Let's just get the truth on the table. What you had to do in the 70s and people you had to talk to might be different now, but his point is you got to talk to people you don't agree with.
What we saw in the last week with the debating was kind of a speed dating arrangement. We'll give you 5 minutes of national TV time, make an impression, and some did. Some made a very positive impression, others negative. And the exchange between Kamala and Joe Biden got the most attention because he's a front runner. And she was very skilled. I analyzed it later, and I thought to myself, she waited for the first opening. She said, I'm the only African-American on the stage. I should have a right to reply. And who's going to dispute that?
Right.
So then she has a flat-out 60 seconds, and she says, I know you're not a racist. I know you're trying to find ways to work toward common good and agreement. But here's something you did that hurt me personally. It goes on to tell a story of being a student who was bused to school at a time when he was in a very heated national debate, took the position there shouldn't be a national busing policy. It ought to be local. Well, that is a good debate topic. But here's the bottom line, Steve, that you're pointing toward. And I want to just say flat out, I've known this man for a long, long time. Joe Biden is the most caring person that I've ever met in public life. And I say that advisedly because I know some real kind and caring people in both political parties. But he is the most caring person, and to say otherwise is just not true. Secondly, he came to the United States Senate and bragged about for years because of civil rights. Delaware, you think of as a northern state, one of the last lynchings in America was in the state of Delaware. The southern end of Delaware is the South. And he took on that issue in Delaware and won as the youngest elected to the Senate maybe ever, and deserves credit for it. Over the years, he got embroiled in this debate on busing, which was as divisive then as immigration is now. And he took what he considered to be a principled, reasonable view. I'm not going to question it. I wasn't around to be part of that debate. When it comes to sitting down with people across the table who you wouldn't buy a cup of coffee with or invite over to your home, I do it every day because I realize that if we're going to get anything done, we've got to have people with dramatically different points of view who are willing to try to find some common ground. around.
By the way, in case anybody missed the memo, the only black president in American history picked him twice. I'll let you go on this unless you have something else you want to add in. But I was really troubled, angry, big surprise, when I saw Donald Trump, the president of the United States, step into North Korea, let alone all the glad handing he did for the dictators in his big dictator 5-day getaway. We have no reason to trust this guy. I'm talking about Kim Jong-un. And nothing has changed since he did that. If I'm wrong, tell me.
Bottom line, I'm glad they're talking. It's better than shooting at one another. In reality, nothing has happened here. It was a photo opportunity.
Dick Durbin on with Steve Cochran. If I had to vote today for the Democrat to run for president, I don't know that I would not vote for Biden. But I thought what they said was interesting, fair, and that was a reasonable conversation. I thought it was excellent about Biden. Then they go to Kim Jong-un. But remember, what Durbin was saying about Joe Biden and Cochran, too, is if you talk to somebody who has different feelings than you, that's a good thing. So if Biden was talking to segregationist senators in the 1970s about busing, his point was, and it still should be, we need to talk to people that feel differently than we do. We can't say, you don't have my values, and therefore I won't negotiate with you or talk to you. That's the business we hire these people to do. So what Biden did back then, even on its face, isn't a terrible thing, goes that conversation. And then they say, okay, now Donald Trump goes over and talks to Kim Jong-un. Oh, that's terrible. He's a dictator. He has different values than us. And I told Steve in a text, I said, I thought that was kind of ironic that it's okay for Biden to talk to somebody with different views, but it's not okay for Donald Trump to do that. Isn't that a little bit of a contradiction? Steve isn't here to join us because he's a little under the weather, but he was trading texts with me. And when I made that point to him, he said this. I would add, Trump walking into North Korea as president is much bigger and has ramifications we can't yet quantify. He said that the president gave Kim a giant win and got nothing in return. I get that. But I'm a little more with the senator on this. Better we trade handshakes than missiles, even if now politically Kim Jong-un gets to crow about it a little bit. But that was part of the conversation today. We'll make the news click at WGNradio.com. In fact, Al, if we could put it up as quick as we can get it up. Maybe you have something to say about this. Do you like the fact that the president walked into North Korea and shook that guy's hand? It's a yes or no. The news click at WGNradio.com is going to ask you, do you like the fact that the president shook Kim Jong-un's hand, good or bad? Let's take some phone calls. Barb, you're on WGN. What do you say?
I'm very glad he did. I'm very proud of him.
I'm glad you called. Thanks for listening. John, you're on WGN. Was that a good move?
Excellent. The answer to the short answer to the question is yes. And it's like Democrats don't, they can't bear the thought that Trump's accomplishing. They just don't like that.
I appreciate your phone call, John. I'm going to get as many voices as we can. We're wrapping it up. That's two. You can text 2-312-981-7200. Carolyn, you're on WGN. What do you say?
I say that he has embarrassed us ever since he became the president.
That's not what I asked. I asked, do you like the fact that he shook his hand over there?
No.
Okay, thanks for the call. Let's go from you to Marianne. You're on WGN. What do you say, Marianne?
Yes, I'm glad he did it, because I believe in that old adage, you should hold your enemies close.
Right. That's an interesting point. Thanks for the call. John, this texter says, please address the question if the gasoline tax is going up to repair and fund our roads. Why did the vehicle registration fees go up at the same time? I don't know that the vehicle registration fees are dedicated to road repair the way the gas tax money is, but there's no end to things we have to pay. I hadn't thought about it in those terms. John, if you wouldn't vote for Joe Biden, would you vote for Trump? That's an appalling thought. Any Democrat is better than the current one that we have in the White House. I didn't say I would vote for Trump over Biden. I said I would not necessarily vote for Biden as the Democratic runner. More text just handed to me. All right, let's pause here. It's 2:50. Guys, it says here, John, we were in Chicago in May. The kids looked forward to Millennium Park and Cloudgate. Say, sorry about the graffiti, signed a listener, Bill, in Ohio. This person from 773, Lauren and Kevin, said, can you please stop referring to it as the bean and call it what it really is, Cloudgate? I think Chicagoans know it as the bean. I think it's okay to call it the bean.
I think everybody goes bean.
I
had no idea it was Cloudgate, to be honest.
That's right. How long have you been living back in Chicago? I know you were here, then you went away.
Right. Only since March, but I was only gone for almost three and a half years.
Oh, so then you should have picked up that whole Cloudgate thing.
My bad.
Yeah. It's the bean. I'm sorry, I know, but...
Sears Tower.
Yeah, same thing.
I call it Comiskey, so what do you have to do about that?
Right, exactly.